for now, we're going to go back to Aslan, the stone table, Edmund, and the others. If they could have seen what happened in the valley, I think they might have been surprised. It was perfectly still, and presently the moon grew brighter and brighter. If you had been standing there, you would have seen the moonlight shining on an old tree and close to a boulder. But if you had begun looking, you would have gradually begun to think that there was something quite odd about that tree and that boulder. And you might have thought that the tree did look remarkably like a little fat man crouching on the ground. And if you had watched long enough, you would have seen that the stump across the boulder and the boulder would sit up and start talking to the stump. For in reality, the stump and the boulder were simply the witch and the dwarf. It was a part of her magic that could make things look like what they weren't. The witch had kept hold of the knife to keep it safe inside her hands. When the rest of the children had woken up in the next morning, they'd been sleeping on piles of cushions in the pavilion. The first thing they heard was from Mrs. Beaver. Their brother had been rescued from the White Witch and been brought into camp late last night. And Edmund was at this very moment with Aslan himself. As soon as they had eaten breakfast, they all went out, and they saw Aslan and Edmund walking together in the dewy grass, apart from the rest of the court. There is no need to tell you, and no one ever heard, what Aslan was saying, but it was a conversation which Edmund never forgot. As the others drew nearer, Aslan turned to meet them, bringing Edmund with him. "Here is your brother," he said, "and there is no need to talk to him about what has already passed." Edmund shook hands with each of the other sons of Adam and daughters of Eve, and said to each one of them in turn, "I'm sorry." And everyone said, "That's all right." And then everyone wanted very hard to say something which would make it quite clear that they were all friends with him again. Something ordinary and natural. And of course, no one could think of anything in the world to say. But before they had time to feel really awkward, one of the leopards approached Aslan and said, "Sire, there is a messenger from the enemy who craves audience." "Let him approach," said Aslan. The leopard went away and soon returned, leading the witch's dwarf. "What is your message, son of Earth?" asked Aslan. "The Queen of Narnia and Empress of the Lone Islands desires a safe conduct to come and speak with you," said the dwarf, "on a matter which is much to your advantage as to hers." "Queen of Narnia, indeed! All of the cheek," said the beaver. "Peace, beaver," said Aslan. "All names will soon be restored to their proper owners. In the meantime, we will not dispute about noises. Tell your mistress, son of Earth, that I grant her safe conduct on condition
that she leaves her wand behind at that great oak. This was agreed to, and two leopards went back with the dwarf to see that the conditions were properly carried out.
But supposing she turns the two leopards into stone, whispered Lucy to Peter.
I think the same idea had occurred to the leopards themselves at any rate. As they walked off, their fur was all standing up. They were on edge. On their backs and their tails, everything was bristling. Like a cat when it sees a strange dog. It'll be all right, whispered Peter. He wouldn't send them if they weren't. A few minutes later, the witch herself walked out onto the top of that hill and came straight across and stood before Aslan. The three children, who had not seen her before, felt shudders running down their backs at the sight of her wicked face. And there were low growls among all the animals present. Though it was bright sunshine, everyone suddenly felt cold. The only two people present who seemed to be quite at ease were Aslan and the witch herself. It was the oddest thing to see those two faces
so close together.
Not that the witch looked Aslan in his eyes. Mrs. Beaver particularly noticed. You have a traitor there, Aslan, the witch said. Of course, everyone present knew that she meant Edmund, but Edmund had got past thinking about himself after all he'd been through, and after the talk he'd had that morning, he just went on looking at Aslan. It didn't seem to matter what the witch said. Well, said Aslan, his offense was not against you. Have you not forgotten the deep magic? Asked the witch.
Let us say I have forgotten it. Tell us of this deep magic.
Tell you? Said the witch, her voice growing suddenly shriller. Tell you what is written on that very table of stone which stands beside us? Tell you what is written in letters, deep as a spear is long on the trunk of the world ash tree? Tell you what is engraved on the scepter of the emperor beyond the sea? You at least know the magic which the emperor put into Narnia at the very beginning. You know that every traitor belongs to me as my lawful prey, and that for every treachery I have a right to kill. Oh, said Mr. Beaver, that's how you come to imagine yourself a queen, because you were the emperor's hangman. I see. Peace, Beaver, said Aslan with a very low growl. And so, continued the witch, that human creature is mine. His life is forfeit to me. His blood is my property. Come and take it then, said the bull, with a man's head and a great bellowing voice. Fool! Said the witch with a savage smile that was almost a snarl. Do you really think your master can rob me of my rights by mere force? He knows the deep magic better than that. He knows that unless I have blood as the law, all Narnia will be overturned and perish in fire. It is very true, said Aslan. I do not deny it. Oh, Aslan, can't we do something about this deep magic? Isn't there some way that you can work against it? Work against the Emperor's magic,
Aslan, turning to her with something like a frown on his face. And nobody ever made that suggestion to him again. Edmund was on the other side of Aslan, looking all the time at Aslan's face. He felt a choking feeling and wondered if he ought to say something. But a moment later, he felt that he was not expected to do anything except to wait and do what he was told. "Fall back, all of you," said Aslan. "I will talk with the witch alone." They all obeyed. It was a terrible time, this waiting and wondering while the lion and the witch talked earnestly together in low voices. Lucy said, "Oh, Edmund," and began to cry. Peter stood with his back to the others, looking out at the distant sea. The beavers stood holding each other's paws with their heads bowed. The centaurs stamped uneasily with their hoofs. But everyone became perfectly still in the end, so that you noticed even small sounds like a bumblebee flying past, or the birds in the forest down below them, or the wind rustling the leaves, and the talk between Aslan and the White Witch went on. At last they heard Aslan's voice. "You can all come back. I have settled the matter. She has renounced the claim on your brother's blood." And all over the hill there was a noise of this, as if everyone had been holding their breath and had now begun breathing again, and a murmur of talk. They began to come back to Aslan's throne. The witch was just turning away with a look of fierce joy on her face when she stopped and said, "But how do I know this promise will be kept?" Aslan roared, "Wah!" half rising from his throne and his great mouth opening wider and wider, and the roar grew louder and louder and louder. And the White Witch, after staring for a moment with her lips apart, picked up her skirts and fairly ran for her life. As soon as the witch had gone, Aslan said, "We must move from this place at once. It will be wanted for other purposes. We shall encamp tonight at the fords of Biruna." Of course, everyone was dying to ask him how he arranged matters with the witch, but his face was stern and everyone's ears were still ringing in the sound of his roar, and so nobody dared. After a meal which was taken in the open air on the hilltop, where the sun had got strong and the dry grass, they were busy for a while taking the pavilion down and packing things up. Before 2 o'clock, they were on the march and set off in a northwesterly direction, walking at an easy pace, for they had not far to go. During the first part of the journey, Aslan explained to Peter his plan of campaign. As soon as she was finished with her business in this parts, the witch and her crew will almost certainly fall back to her house and prepare for a siege. You may or may not be able to cut her off and prevent her from reaching it, and then went on to outline 2 plans of battle, one for fighting the witch and her people in the wood, and another for assaulting her castle. And all the time, she was advising Peter how to conduct the operations, saying things like, "You must put your centaurs in such and such a place, or you must post scouts to see that she doesn't do so and so." Till at last Peter said, "But you will be there yourself, Aslan." "I can give you no promise of that," answered the lion, and he continued giving Peter his instructions. For the last part of the journey, it was Susan and Lucy who saw most of him. He did not talk very much, and he seemed to be quite sad to them, in fact. It was still afternoon when they came down to a place where the river valley had widened out and the river was broad and shallow. This was the fords of Biruna, and Aslan gave orders to halt on this side of the water. But Peter said, "Wouldn't it be better to camp on the far side for fear she should try a night attack or anything?" Aslan, who seemed to have been thinking about something else, roused himself with a shake of magnificent mane and said, "What's that?" Peter said it all over again. "No, no, she will not make an attack tonight." And then he deeply sighed. But presently he added, "All the same, it was well thought of. That is how a soldier ought to think. But it doesn't really matter." So they proceeded to pitch their camp. Aslan's mood affected everyone that evening. Peter was feeling uncomfortable, too, at the idea of fighting the battle on his own. The news that Aslan might not be there had come as a great shock to him. Supper that evening was a quiet meal. Everyone felt how different it had been last night or even that morning. It was as if the good times, having just begun, were already drawing to their end. The feeling affected Susan so much that she couldn't sleep when she went to bed. And after she had lain counting sheep and turning over and over, she heard Lucy give a long sigh and turn over just beside her in the darkness. "Can't you get to sleep either?" said Susan. "No," said Lucy. "I thought you were asleep," I say. "Susan? What?" "I've a most terrible feeling, as if something were hanging over us." "Have you?" "Because as a matter of fact, so have I." "Something about Aslan. Either some dreadful thing that is going to happen, or something dreadful that he's going to do. There's been something wrong with him all afternoon," said Susan. "Lucy, what was that he said about not being with us at the battle? You don't think he could be stealing away and leaving us tonight, do you? Where is he now? Is he here in the pavilion?" "I don't think so." "Susan, let's go outside and have a look around. We might see him." "All right, let's. And we might just be doing something since we're lying awake here anyway." Very quietly, the girls stepped out among the other sleepers and crept out through the tent. The moonlight was bright and everything was quite still except for the noise of the river chattering over the stones. Then Susan suddenly caught Lucy's arm and said, "Look, on the far side of the camping ground, just where the trees began, they saw the lion slowly walking away from them into the wood. Without a word, they both followed him. He led them up the steep slope out of the river valley and then slightly to the left, apparently by the very same route which they had used that afternoon in coming from the hill of the stone table. On and on he led them into dark shadows and out into pale moonlight, getting their feet wet with the heavy dew. He looked somehow different from Aslan. His tail and his head hung low, and he walked slowly as if he were very, very tired. And then when they were crossing a wide open place where they had no shadows for them to hide in, he stopped and looked around. It was no good trying to run away, so they came toward him. When they were closer, he said, 'Oh, children, children, why are you following me?' 'We couldn't sleep,' said Lucy, and then felt sure that she need say no more, and that Aslan knew they all had been thinking. 'Please may we come with you wherever you're going?' said Susan. 'Well,' said Aslan, and seemed to be thinking. Then he said, 'I should be glad of company tonight. Yes, you may come, if you will promise to stop when I tell you. And after that,
leave me to go alone.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, the two girls said. And we will. Forward they went again, and one of the girls walked on each side of the lion. But how slowly he walked, and his great royal head drooped so that his nose nearly touched the grass. Presently he stumbled and gave a low moan. Aslan, dear Aslan. What is wrong? Can't you tell us? Are you ill, dear Aslan? No, said Aslan. I am sad and lonely. Lay your hands on my mane so that I can feel you are there, and let us walk like that. So the girls did what they would never have dared to do without his permission, but what they had longed to do ever since they first saw him, buried their cold hearts in the beautiful sea of fur, and walked with him. Presently, they saw that they were going with him up the slope of the hill on which the stone table stood. They went up at the side where the trees came furthest up, and when they got to the last tree, was the one that had some bushes on it. Aslan stopped. And tonight, here too, we must stop our story. We've been through a long journey. The White Witch and Aslan, they each have their role in Narnia and on all the journeys throughout their life. As we sign off tonight, let's hope we dream of Narnia, of Aslan, and of all our friends, even the White Witch.
And as well, Amanda, I have a question.
What's your question?